while Ardsdale Baptist Church brings you the Word of God with practicality and simplicity. As you listen to this message, we trust that it will equip and empower you to find and fulfill your purpose.
Today, we start this new series, Fractured People, Flawless God. And the series was put together towards the end of last year. As I said, as I reflected on, the fact that we were going to be celebrating the Queen's Platinum Jubilee, 70 years as Queen, 70 years as monarch. And this series will culminate on, what I'm calling for the purposes of this Jubilee Sunday. So in 4 weeks' time, 4 Sundays from now, is the big, the big Jubilee celebration. As we journey over the next few weeks, I pray that you will see God's flawless presence, even when there may be fractured elements in our lives, things that aren't quite joined up. His God's sovereignty bursting through, God's sovereignty covering our lives. So I pray that as we go through this, that you will see over the next few weeks, see more of God in the very details, in the small details of your life. I pray that you'll see how important it is, to recognize that God is making things happen, even sometimes when we don't see them. I pray that you'll see the value of obedience. You'll see that in its time, God makes things beautiful. I pray that you will see the value of faithfulness to God and how sometimes his obedience really can trigger, can lead to, can enhance his favor over us. And I pray that in it you will see that God's will does come to pass. In each week of the series, we're going to have a subtitle, as it were, a working subtitle. Working for Your Good is the first one, followed by next week, it's Making It Without Faking It. The week after that, it's All for One, One for All. And we end with a question of sacrifice. And each of these subtitles are there to help us center the journey so we can learn from Esther. I have a question. How many of you like crosswords or puzzles? Crosswords, there's a good fair few people up there. Crosswords, puzzles. Sudoku. I don't know how to say it. You know the one I'm talking about, yes? Yeah, and the new one now, Wordle. Wordle. People are saying Wordle. I looked at that thing. I was like, "What? I can't get my head around it. Give me a crossword. Give me a acrostic. Word search. I can handle that." Why are you laughing? Why? There's nothing wrong with word searches. I'm the guy with the microphone, so I say. When you read the book of Esther, right? You see the story, you see this narrative, the story of Esther. The facts are there, it's all laid out. However, if you look again, you'll see that there are some things, Esther is one of those books that stuff is left for us to figure out, stuff is left for us to work out, for us to go a little bit deeper and try and understand what's going on in there. And in some regards, I see it. When I read the book of Esther, for me, it's like a bit of a puzzle. You're trying to figure out, what's going on, what's God saying. Here's a question. The book of Esther is about who? Who's the book about? Somebody said Esther. Right. Okay. Any other takers? Book of Esther is about Esther, right? Is it? Or is it Israel? Everybody else is thinking this guy and his trick questions. Come on. Book of Esther is about who? Mordecai? It's not about Mordecai. Okay, I suppose it's about Mordecai, really.
The Jews and Haman.
The Jews, Haman. Okay. Let me say this. The book of Esther is actually about God. Don't give me yeah. Nobody said God. Yeah, everyone's like, yeah. Nobody said God. The reason I'm asking is the strange thing is if you look at the book of Esther, look at all 10 chapters of the book of Esther, there's lots of words, there's lots of names, there's lots of descriptions. And like any good movie, any good play, any good script, you see all the characters play, written out. The players are there. They're highlighted for us to see. And knowing these names help us know, and the roles that they play help us figure out, how we should be viewing that journey or what we can learn from that journey. I was looking at this, I like to count. Chapter 1 alone has got 16 people referenced. 16. It talks about the king, the queen, the seven eunuchs or the officers, the other nobles of Persia and the people of Media who had access to the lands, you know, who were, you know, yeah, the highest in the kingdom. From chapter 2 onwards, you start to see Esther's mentioned, of course, Mordecai, her uncle, cousin, uncle, and the bad man, Haman, you know, he's also mentioned. The names of Xerxes, the king, occurs 30 times through this book. Mordecai is mentioned 60 times, Esther 55 times, Haman 54 times. Other than all these people named, you now have all the people who are referenced, who are not named, the nobles, the officials, the people in Susa, all the people in the courts and the palaces. From the least to the greatest, all names. The people of Persia and Media are all named or mentioned or referred to. Now, after all of those names have been said, whose name hasn't been said? God. Who is the one that's not even mentioned, alluded to? God. You know, as a comparison, the shortest book in the Old Testament is Obadiah. Obadiah has only one chapter. Out in Obadiah, there are six references to God or the Lord or, you know. And yet, this book doesn't have God in it. So how does a book that doesn't talk about God, refer to God, how does that make it into the Bible? How? How? Pardon? Because of the fasting. Okay. Maybe. Perhaps. Thank you, Felix. Well, my hope is that over this sermon and the next four sermons, we'll be a little bit closer to understanding that a little bit better. And I want to encourage you, obviously, you're not going to remember everything. You're not going to remember everything I say today or everything that's said over the next 3 weeks as well. Go on the website, have another listen. Yeah, the sermons are there for you. If you want to get into a little bit of discussion or deeper understanding, the cell group, and thank you, Frank. You know, as you see, the cell group questions are prepared every week, and Frank does that and sends them out. Join a cell group. You know, get plugged into a cell group and let's grow together in this. So the subtitle today, the working subtitle, is Working for Your Good. And let's look at some of the stuff that happened in this book. First of all, I want to introduce you to some of the main characters in the book of Esther. I've mentioned some of them by name already. I'll start with King Xerxes. This story, this account, and particularly what was read in chapter one, this is set after the Jews had come back from exile. So they'd been free from Babylon. They'd come back from exile. The Persians were ruling, and Xerxes was the king. Some other translations have his name as Ahasuerus or something, but you know, just in case you're using the King James Version, but for the purpose of today, we'll go with Xerxes. Now, this guy was something else. He had a fearsome reputation. Fearsome, absolutely fearsome reputation. He wasn't some sort of puppet leader. He ruled with absolute power, and some would argue even probably quite vicious. He was very, very rich. His kingdom was vast. It started sort of all the way from India, zigzagged through the Middle East, all the way through to Egypt in Africa. This guy was a big boy, as it were. And he was rich. He had a vast empire. Somebody said to me, oh, Xerxes liked to party. No, he didn't like to party. Xerxes loved to party. I mean, it was, you know, we heard about it just now. You know, verse 3 of our text tells us that he had been king for 3 years. Just 3 years when he decides he's going to have a party that defines all parties. This party includes exhibitions. It includes celebrations. You know, in a few weeks' time, we're going to celebrate our monarch. Our queen has been on the throne for 70 years, and she's given us an extra bank holiday. Yay. You know, we're grateful. This guy, 3 years in, has a party. And his party goes on for 6 months. Saints, I'm coming up to 3 years at Pollard's Hill Baptist Church. I'm just saying. I'm just saying. And he didn't just have a six-month party. When the party was done, he had a celebration feast that lasted for a week. Now, there's all sorts of, when you read chapter one, there's all sorts of other opulence and extravagance that's described, gold and silver couches. I mean, who wants to sit on a gold couch? It's like sitting on a rock. There's nothing nice about that. The drinks were on tap. Literally, all the drinks were on him. Everybody was there. I mean, this is the kind of guy Xerxes was. Second person to mention in the list is Queen Vashti. his queen. The Bible doesn't tell us too much about Vashti, other than the fact that she was queen to Xerxes. We've already caught a sense of the kind of person he is. This guy's there, he's throwing out his money, throwing about, you know, he's lavishing his wealth on people. He's not just getting drunk. Chapter 1 tells us, he tells them, give everybody as much as they want to drink. The whole country is getting lashed. And in all likelihood, with that much booze, you know, flowing, his mates are getting up to no good. These guys are probably, I mean, they're getting lashed out of their brains, you know? And then after 7 days of getting drunk, he tells them to bring his wife. Tell my wife in here to come and show herself to my friends. Like some object. You're not doing that with your cars or your, well, he didn't have cars. With your, well, your chariots. Anyway, don't let me start on that. And we see this woman, she said no. She said no. He got upset, he got vexed. He was probably embarrassed after boasting about his wife is this, his wife can do that. And she does what I tell her to do, yeah, yeah. I'll show you. Get her here. She was like, mate, I'm not doing that. I'm not degrading myself or anything. What's wrong with you? And then the plan backfires. These people tell him to banish his wife. And the control freak that he is, he goes, yeah, banish her. She can go. PHVC family, listen, you've heard me talk about this many times, and you know, the battery that charges the device is here. I can't remember who it was that said, oh, I really like your wife, you know. I said, oh, really? Yeah, so do I. I said, yeah, she's got a real handle on you. I was like, okay, no, you don't have to say that. You know. But I want to encourage you women who know you are a queen. God has created you to be a queen. Yeah? Be a queen. Do you understand what I'm saying? Be a queen. By all means, you know, your husband, you're there to help meet, you're there to support him. Help him be the best he's supposed to be. Come on. You help him. So, you know, he wants to make good decisions, you help him. And he's subject to the influence, excuse my language, too many children. I was going to say S-T-U-P-I-D, but I'm not going to say the word. Just spelt it. He wants to be subject to real dumb choices and bad influence. You help him see that he can be better than that. Isn't that right, ladies?
Yes.
Okay, then. You help him. No matter what he wants, you keep your dignity at all times. The man falls in the gutter. You stand on the ledge and you try and help him out. Don't jump in there with him. You're hearing it from a man. Don't jump in there with him. Come on now. Keep your dignity. You know, be a queen at all times. I thank God for the godly women that we've been blessed here in this wonderful, the best church in the world. Telling you. You know. PHBC women, are you here?
Yes.
I salute you. Anyway, sorry, I couldn't help myself. I've digressed. So the third person, Haman. Haman the bad man. I couldn't help. I thought, hey man, yeah, he was a bad man. I thought, wow, I'm going to put that on screen. Hey man, the bad man. You know, and I want to introduce Haman using some of the opening words from chapter 3. I'm going to read this from the message. It says, sometime later, King Xerxes promoted Haman, son of Hamadath, the Agagite. come on, man, you know. Making him the highest ranking official in the government. All the king's servants at the king's gate used to honor him by bowing down and kneeling before Haman. And that's what the king had commanded, except Mordecai. Mordecai wouldn't do it, wouldn't bow down and kneel. Great. These are some of the words from chapter 3. But as you can see, this kind of sets the tone for what happens between Mordecai and Haman. So the final person to introduce is, obviously, I just mentioned his name, the man Mordecai. And here he is. I'm going to read a snippet from chapter 2, also from the message, that gives you a sense of where Mordecai fits in. It says, now there was a Jew who lived in the palace complex in Susa. His name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjaminite. His ancestors had been taken from Jerusalem, and the exiles carried off with King Jehoiakim of Judah by King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon. This is hard, right? Let me just read this bit. This is the important bit. Mordecai had raised his cousin Hadassah, otherwise known as Esther, since she had no father or mother. The girl had a good figure and a beautiful face. After her parents died, Mordecai adopted her. Yeah. So he adopted her. So there we have it. There are the key people, Xerxes, Vashti, Haman, Mordecai. Of course, Esther as well. The book is named after her. So the whole book, the entirety of this book, tells us her story. And in it, we start to see God working for good. Chapter 1, we read earlier, we saw what happened with Xerxes. He calls Vashti, she keeps her dignity. He follows the advice, he banishes her. Chapter 2, and you're going to hear more about this over the next coming weeks. When the red mist had cleared from his eyes, he felt, and his advisor said, go get yourself another wife. He took their advice, and eventually the search led him to Esther, and he replaced Vashti with Esther. Esther became queen. Also in chapter 2, there's a situation where Mordecai hears about a plot to kill Xerxes, the king. And so he tells Esther to tell her husband, the king, listen, these guys are plotting, your downfall. And obviously it gave Mordecai favor with Xerxes. Let me just stop and remind you. Mordecai was a Jew. Esther was a Jew. Xerxes was not. He was Persian. So let me be clear. There was some, cultural, nationality, pardon? Racial. That's actually what I was looking for. I mean, the black guy forgets the word. It's okay. Life happens. So there were some racial issues there. There were some cultural issues there. Big differences, right? So anyway, Mordecai's nationality was an issue. Haman, the bad man that we heard about previously, this guy wanted to kill all the Jews. And he was, and don't forget, he'd been promoted to the highest office in the land. And he decided he's going to annihilate all the Jews, right? And this guy was deadly serious about it. He was worse than Hitler. Proper ethnic cleansing. Because he considered these people less valuable than himself, less valuable than his own people. And in chapter 4, where Mordecai and Esther come up, together they come up with a plan to thwart Haman's, his scheme, thank you. Haman wants to kill all the Jews. Mordecai and Esther say, what can we do? And together they come up with a plan. Let me read some words to tell you a little bit about what's going on. Mordecai sent back this answer, said, do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone out of all the Jews will escape. So he's reminding her, you're a Jew. You're also under threat from this bad man Haman, right? He says, if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from somewhere else, from another place, and you and your family, your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this. Those famous words, for just such a time as this. Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai, go, gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my attendants will fast as you do. And when this is done, I will go to the king, even though it's against the law. And if I perish, I perish. Again, those famous words. If I perish, I perish. Hopefully over the weeks to come, we're going to look at more of this. But let me tell you, this conversation between Esther and Mordecai set into plan or set into motion, all sorts of things. It set into motion effectively deliverance of the Jews from this impending death. And in chapter 7, we see eventually how Haman, the bad man, was executed using, something he had set up for Mordecai to be executed with. So there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on in the books, in the chapters of Esther, believe me. And there's loads and loads of stuff going on there. There's probably loads and loads of stuff going on in your life. In your life. Where is your difficulty? Where is your challenge? Where is it? There's trouble and tribulation and stress and striving going on through the chapters of the book of Esther. And there's probably some in your life as well. Now, I can't speak specifically to what you're going through, but I can tell you this. Just like in this book, I don't know what battles you're facing. I don't know what enemies may be coming for you. I don't know what plans, what schemes are against you. But I know that God always has what I call kingdom insiders. People in just the right place, who are there for just the right time, who he will use in just the right way. And he has placed them there for such a time as this. It may be that someone is placed somewhere to be a blessing to you. It may be that you are placed somewhere to be a blessing to someone. The kingdom insiders, as I call them. And that's more or less what I want to say for today. I want to just give you some closing thoughts and then we're gone. As I was preparing for today, I remembered there's a popular phrase that big doors swing on little hinges. Even big doors swing on little hinges. If we look at the things that happen in the book of Esther, these huge changes, these, you know, one person trying to kill a whole bunch of people, people getting executed, and all of this stuff, these big things were set into motion by one small incident. And it's true that sometimes one small thing in our lives can have big consequences. And sometimes when we go through this, we go through and we're seeing these big things happening, it's easy to start to wonder, just like in the book of Esther, where's God? Where's God? I want to go there. I've been to Ukraine many times, and Vita, your sister, will tell you, your mom will tell you. I've been to Ukraine many times, and it's a country that I love. I tell people, if you cut me, I'll bleed blue and yellow. I wear this a lot. You know, if you cut me, I'll bleed blue and yellow. My heart is really for Ukraine. Ukrainian food? Oh my goodness. Oh my, borscht, vareniki, you know? Hoblutsi? Ah, pardon? Holupsi, that's it. Holupsi. This is delicious. Listen, you eat this food, you will be set free. Telling you. But you know, the difficulty that Vita has had to witness. But not just that. What she's had to leave behind. What they've had to leave behind. The memories. There's a sense of identity that they've had to leave behind. There are things that some of us are going through that the rest of us can't imagine. And honestly, sometimes when we look at life, it's like a puzzle. Like I was saying earlier on, the answer's not there. But actually, the thing about puzzles is that the answer's there. If only we would look closely. The answer's there. The answer is there. Some of the answers are obvious. Some of them are not so obvious. What's so amazing about this thing is that despite all these huge things, these, you know, seemingly massive things that are happening, God was quietly directing things. God was working behind the scenes at all times, arranging events, changing minds, even in the secular sphere, even in the political sphere. All we have to do was look closely. Big doors swing on little hinges. PHBC family, it's easy to think that if God is really engaged, if God is really with us, things would change now. Things would change this minute, this hour, this week. But I want to remind you that God is not subject to time as we are. He's outside of time. He works in his own schedule. He's never early. He is never late. Never. The book of Ecclesiastes tells us that in its time, he makes all things beautiful. And so we see with Xerxes and his corrupt government and the power, you know, that he was wielding, God was still sovereign over it. God was still working things out. And he still is working things out, even when we cannot see. Through the whole of the Esther story, as we go through, we see that God is working. And he works sometimes in silent ways. Sometimes he works in mysterious ways, his wonders to perform. And God is so often more active in our lives than we're aware of. He's active in the pain. He's active in the suffering. He's with us. That popular Psalm 23 says, even in the valley of the shadow of death, there's no need to be afraid, for he is with us. Full stop. You can stop there. That's it. You're with me, even in the valley. He is never to, and you know, sometimes it might feel like, you know, God is far away. But if we look, just like the puzzle, if we look, we'll see that his peace and his presence are actually closer than we think. Actually closer than we think. He's still near. Distance doesn't push him away. Danger doesn't push, even disobedience doesn't push God away. As far as we are the ones that leave, not God. You know, God is the real hero of our stories. And so many times we go through situations, we think that all is lost. We feel like, you know, yeah, life is meaningless. But the book of Esther begs to differ. It brings a different dimension. In this book, through Esther's story, we see faith, we see hope, we see love working, weaving the miraculous, even in the strangest places, even in the least expected places. And whenever we're in difficulty or worrisome situations, the book of Esther reminds us, similar to what it says in Philippians. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 6 says, don't fret or worry. Instead of worrying, pray. Let petitions and praises shape your worries into prayers, letting God know your concerns. Before you know it, a sense of God's wholeness, everything coming together for good, will come and settle you down. It's wonderful what happens when Christ displaces worry at the center of your life. Every blessing you poured out, I'll turn back to praise. And when we look at how crazy things are in our world, John 14, 27, and this is from the New King James, says, peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. I don't give it as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled and do not be afraid. And overall, one of the favorites, very well-known scripture. When the children of Israel were in Babylon, the prophet Jeremiah said these words, I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. They're plans for peace and not disaster, this translation says. Plans to give you a future filled with hope. Amen? So people of God, it's time to step up. It's time to align your life, your own choices with God's purpose. It's time to recognize and respond to the things he's doing. It's time to open your eyes, look closely, and see him working for your good. See the way he's been weaving your life together. It's time to totally let go and trust him with your present reality. Trust him with your eternal destiny. It's time to do that. And you've been encouraged from the beginning of this year. We've all been encouraged through the words of the motto verse that we need, that you need to be strong and courageous. You must be unafraid. You do not be discouraged because you know that the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. Why? Because he is working for your good.
We trust that you've been blessed and believe that this message has brought you greater understanding. For more information, or to follow up on what you've heard in this message, visit us on www.phbc.org.uk. God bless you.